Blog Talk Radio.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler, and this is Topically Yours. You know, once in a while, I like to focus on young people and their careers, especially those youth whose form of entertainment is positive. And people often say that show business is about glamour, blitz, premieres, and beautiful clothes. But you know what? Show business takes work. A performer in many ways is a reflection of society as well as a creator of trends. Show business requires stamina. So one has to consider diet, exercise, vocal lessons, dancing lessons, and auditions, etc. So entertainers are often on the go from a.m. to p.m. Plus they have to put whatever they create before a large audience of people who judge them and their talent. But it has its rewards, but those rewards come with hard work. So my two guests today are Cynese, a young performer, lyricist, singer, dancer, designer, and arranger. And he's going to be on the first half of the show, and then I'm going to have on the second half of the show a young performer named Christine Morrell, who is an equally talented singer and who is also someone with business aspirations. Well, I'm going to talk to both of them, and I'm going to let them tell you about themselves and what they do. So I'm going to start off the show with Siamese, who I've known for many years, and so I'm delighted to have him come on the show. And you just heard one of his songs that I just played at the top of the show, which is called Feel Good, Real Good. So, as I said, Siamese is here, so welcome, Siamese, to the show.
Thank you so much, Deirdre. It's a pleasure being here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I know that it's early in New York on the East Coast, so it must be super early out there on the West Coast.
Very much so. That's why I sound like Barry White.
Well, as you heard, I started off the show with your song, Feel Good, Real Good. Tell me about that song. You wrote it yourself, correct?
Yes, ma'am, I did. That song that, it's actually, it's very old. I wrote that back in, like, maybe 2002. A lot of my songs that I write, they're more so mantras to myself, reminders. And Feel Good, Real Good, it just kind of took on a life of its own. So when I write my songs, sometimes the inspiration, like I don't have a formula per se, but the inspiration for that song in particular, it just came with basically my life. You know, I have been judged by the clothes that I wear, how I speak, how I look. Even if I wasn't just, if I was wearing just regular, you know, John Jacob Jingerheimer Schmidt clothes, it's still, I've still gotten like a lot. So it's just a song of basically people that, you know, look at me. I'm an open book, and that there's more to me than meets the eye. Everything in the song is really from my heart. It's from my own life experience. And, I'm glad I was able to take a lot of the struggles and the pains and the challenges that I've been through in my life to kind of put it into that song. And I'm thankful that, you know, Goddess herself empowered me to do so.
Well, do you also, that I know you write the lyrics, but do you also write the melodies as well?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
The
first thing that hit me was the and I kind of built on top of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Sometimes songs can hit you lyrics first or melody first. But yeah, that's what kind of drove it at first.
Do you play a musical instrument?
I do not. The only instrument I play is this vessel right here. Just about it.
Well, you come from a showbiz family, so tell me a little about them and a little bit about your background. I know you're in Vegas, but you weren't raised there.
Yeah, that is correct. I'm from Annapolis, Maryland. My parents, I went on the road with them when I was 16, just to kind of paraphrase. I was doing stuff that teenagers are not supposed to be doing. I was doing things. And I was kind of acting up. I really didn't know what my life's purpose was at the time. And I was very, very angry. And I didn't know why. So I was getting into just about everything you could possibly imagine at that time. I was with my grandmother at the time, and she got back to my parents and let them know, your son is acting up. My father called me, like, later on that week. And, you know, we had a deep, very, very deep conversation. And I said, if I stay here, I'll probably die. And I didn't realize the depth of those words. But, you know, I said it to him, and I was serious, and I wasn't expecting anything. The next thing I know, he's made a lot of calls. He's moved mountains. And next thing I know, I'm on the road with him. Dancing behind my mom as a background dancer. So I went from background dancing, fast forwarding, first place they took me to was San Juan, Puerto Rico. All of these different places. I've been to Australia. I've had the opportunity to go to Russia, just places I would never have gone had I not, gone on the road with her. And
how did you finish schooling? You had tutors?
It was perfect timing because it was like right in my last. I was already in grade 12. I was supposed to have graduated, but they took me off the road. They took me out of school, and I've continued the rest doing homeschooling.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
So were you a natural dancer, or you just learned from your mom's a dancer and singer?
Oh, thank you. Well, as far as the dancing was concerned, no, it was more so. When I was in high school, dance teacher approached me. I was doing Russian squats, with the guys in the gym. And she's like, oh, you should come dance. You should try out for the dancing team. I was like, yeah. And I didn't think anything of it. Next thing you know, word got around school, and they were like, all the girls were coming to me in the dance class saying, oh, so we heard you're going to join the team. I was like, no, I'm not joining the team. But, a couple of smiles later and so forth, and some people who are very, very insistent. I can't
and
use
persuasive,
a
I'm sure.
Yeah, very, very persuasive.
I'm sure it didn't hurt to have the girls there, too.
I'm sorry?
I'm sure it didn't hurt all those pretty girls with it, too.
Well, yeah, that was actually my incentive. I didn't really know much about dance at the time, but I stuck with it for about a good 2 years and so forth. And, about a good two years after wrestling. It's so funny. My life's been so weird. I went from football to wrestling into dancing. Just total, complete polar opposite. But, yeah,
well,
they took me on the road. They took me on the road. My mom heard me singing in the kitchen one day. I was singing Sylvester's Mighty Reel. I was just harmonizing with him, and she was like, oh, son, you can really sing. I was making scrambled eggs. I'll never forget it. We were in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was like, oh, well, thanks a lot. And again, I just kind of shoved it off. I didn't think anything of it, and next thing you know, I was auditioning for a boy band, and just to kind of go into specifics, I fasted for 7 days because I was satisfied being a background dancer for my mom. But I was like, in my mind, I kept feeling like I wanted to do more, but I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do or what I needed to do, what direction. So I fasted for 7 days, and I said, God, I'm going to fast for 7 days. My body's going to go into a catabolic state. It's going to eat itself, but I don't care. I'm doing this in honor of you, that in hopes that you might show me, just like give me an idea of what it is that I'm really supposed to be doing with my life. And on the seventh day, I was weak. I was emaciated, about 120 pounds. And that was the very day that I got a call to try out for a boy group. I never made it because they said I wasn't black enough, whatever that means. But, yeah, it was very, very interesting. But it lit that spark for me to want to go into music. I was like, okay, well, maybe this is something that I could actually do for a living.
Well, that was actually a sign, I would say. Now, I was mentioning that show business is hard work, and you require a lot of stamina. Can you tell the listeners what your routine is on a daily basis to prepare yourself?
Ah, yes, ma'am. I really right now I do a lot of cardio. I don't go too crazy. But it's just the intensity. I really only do about a good 30 to 45 minutes. And then while I'm doing that, I sing. And that's the key. You want to talk about revving it up and revving your engine. Try singing while you're running, on 6.0 up to 10.0 on the treadmill. And that'll, whatever intensity, whatever plateaus you might have reached, it really, really challenges your body. So I do strength training. I do circuit training. And I try to do that also while singing as well. That's pretty much it. And I try to keep myself as limber as possible. So I do stretch.
Well, that also goes into your routine, because you do a lot of dancing and singing at the same time, and I would almost say like ballet, jumping up in the air and all of that, acrobatic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so funny because I really admire Desmond Richardson. He's a great dancer. Baryshnikov, all of these, you know, classical trained dancers. And I never got a chance to really be that kind of dancer per se. So it's like Pink. She wanted to be a gymnast, but now she's kind of living it through her music. So in some instances, when I perform on stage, I'm living my Desmond Richardson dreams and Baryshnikov dreams in some strange, my own kind of way while I'm performing and singing. So.
Well, I also mentioned that you grew up in a show business family, and so that means that often you meet other celebrities. Tell me about some of the celebrities that come into your life, and have they shared and given you advice?
Wow. Not so much as advice. Well, probably the one thing that stuck with me the most was when I met Eartha Kitt. And, you know, I'm sorry?
She's a fabulous dancer and singer.
Yeah, she's very great. And she's actually the first celebrity that I was introduced to by my parents. And we were at Schuller's nightclub, and she was performing, so it was very, very cabaret style. And she blew me away. And I'm not used to meeting performers after seeing the music or other concerts. Normally, you see the concert and you leave. So I felt like I was getting a behind the veil, per se. And next thing you know, I'm there behind, you know, in the room with Eartha Kitt. And she's like, hey there, buddy. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, it's Eartha Kitt. And just her story and what she did for us as a black people, that was inspiring. She didn't give me, like, precise advice. You know, she always tells my mom to keep it tight and keep it right and, you know, to stay disciplined. So I take the inspiration of that, you know, she doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke, she doesn't do drugs. And that's how I conduct my life as well.
Well, and that's very important for
Eartha Kitt all the way.
And you also met Frida Payne and others?
Yeah, I met Mama Frida, Dionne Warwick. I call her Mama D. She's great. She's like one of the nicest celebrities that I know, actually. And my parents always told me, they said, well, son, you'll find that as you get more into this business, it's usually the bigger the celebrity, the nicer they are. He's like, it's the one with the egos and normally, like, I guess you would say middle line. They never really made it, or they still kind of make it, and they have, you know, ego trips. But the really big, huge ones, they're always as nice as pie.
And that's been true in your estimation? Yeah, I found that.
Oh, much, yeah. Most definitely, yeah, yeah.
Well, let's move on to the fact that you don't just sing and dance and arrange, and you also like to design. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I do like to design. It wasn't something that I planned, but it was very interesting because when Toni Braxton first came out, like years, like when she, it was the first single that she had, Breathe Again. And I was always seeing her on the music videos, so I would just draw sketches of things that I would imagine her wearing if I was ever able to design for her. And I just kept sketching and sketching, and the next thing you know, I was just sketching my own designs years later, and then I kind of put it away. It wasn't like really a big passion. But then once I got into performing and doing my own stuff, I had a very hard time. I'm not someone who likes to buy something off the rack. I'm not into name brands and, you know, who designed this. I'm more so, how does this make me feel? Is this something that I feel is going to enhance what I'm trying to put out there? There's always, like, something that I'm trying to kind of put together to make it that much more. So when I design, it's just, I was like, you know what? You want something done right, you do it yourself. And that's basically why I really started designing, especially for myself. And then it just kind of blew up into this whole thing. So now I do clothes, but I also do shoes, and I also do hats.
Nice.
Yeah. I even did a guitar.
Really? Oh, you designed your guitar? A guitar.
I did the embroidery on. Like, I do embellishments and so forth. And Ted Perlman, actually, a great, great, great producer and musician, he gave me the honor of doing one of my designs on his sky blue guitar. And then I also did one on an acoustic guitar as well. So, yeah. I'm everywhere.
Well, let me ask you about your music again. Have you? I played "Feel Good, Real Good," and I'm going to play shortly another thing, piece that you wrote called "Yellow Brick Road." But have you other songs out? And if so, are they recorded? I mean, in terms of an album.
That's actually what I'm in the midst of doing now. As far as what's finished, that's probably what you'll be playing per se. But yeah, I do have some other irons in the fire that I'm working on. Like everybody, there's a song called "Everybody Wants to Be Loved," that I love, and I feel like it needs to be. It's one of those songs that needs to be heard by the world. Not just for album sales, but it needs to be heard. It needs to be heard. It needs to be felt and digested by the masses.
And is that because part of you, or much of you, has a spiritual nature and certain philosophies that you would like to impart through that song to the world, or the message that you're giving in that song?
Very much so. Michael Jackson, when he died, I never had the pleasure of meeting him. I never even got a chance to see him live. However, the man that he was, the message that he tried to get out there to the world, and the light that he tried to bring, that is something that I feel has been unfortunately forgotten. I feel like the world has gotten kind of dim ever since he left. And you have all these musicians and recording artists trying to go for his crown, as you know, to be the best performer and to be, you know, to take his crown. And, you know, number one, Michael Jackson is irreplaceable. Number two, what I take from him, and it's not for me trying to reach for this crown that I'll never be able to reach for, it's the message of light that he brought, you know, to heal the world, make it a better place for you, for me, the whole human race. "Man in the Mirror," these are songs that they're timeless. He could sing them in his 20s, his 30s, his 40s, and his 50s. And that's when you know that you've got a song that is not just, you know, I call them, you know, empty musical calories. These are songs that hold credence, and they're always relevant. And I feel that music is, it's a way to heal the world. It's a way to heal people in a way that maybe they wouldn't have been reached. Most people, you know, if you try to talk this message to them, they're like, yeah, go ahead. But if they hear it through music, their subconscious is able to absorb it and to really take in the message. And unfortunately and fortunately, it's good on both aspects, you know, from a good perspective, but also a bad perspective. And I feel that the world has become so violent and so superficial, Deirdre. I mean, half the stuff, I don't even watch TV anymore, the news. I don't really watch any of that because it's just very, very slanted to a negative side. That's why, you know, people like Ellen, people like Oprah, I admire them because at least they're trying to balance the scales. So that's,
speaking of that,
you know,
I'm about to play your "Yellow Brick Road" so that we can get into the rhythm too. Here we go. I want to get that in before we end. All right. That was Yellow Brick Road.
Yellow Brick Road.
Well, I want to ask you, because our time is starting to run out, where do you see your career going in the next 5 years, or what is your goal?
My goal is to be an artist where I'm able to share my music with the masses. Rather than myself be celebrated, if I could just have the message and my message be celebrated, I think that would be great, while also being able to live my dreams of getting my designs and all my artistic creations out there. I have a lot of ideas, not just in music, but even a producer myself, a creator, that I want to get out there. And I almost feel like kind of artistically backed up, per se. So that's my biggest dream. I feel.
Well, why don't you give the audience your website so they can look you up and see what's going on with you? Because Christine has joined us now.
Oh, hey, Christine. My Facebook is Facebook/SiameseFloyd. And then I also have my YouTube channel, which is, again, Siamese Floyd.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming to visit with us. It's been my pleasure to have you on. I know a half hour goes very quickly.
It certainly does. He of the long-windedness.
Pardon me?
He of the long-winded. Yeah, I take after my dad.
No kidding. But you did good. We have Christine here. How are you, Christine?
Hi, dear. I'm good. Thank you. How you doing?
I'm good.
Christine.
Thank you.
Hello. Yeah, it's pretty early here. I had actually a really late session yesterday, so it's up to like 4 o'clock in the morning. It's 8:30 over here now. So.
I know.
Bringing off a few hours of sleep. Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a big time difference.
So Siamese, you can either hang in or what do you want to do?
I'm going to let you guys enjoy it to yourself. Christine, you enjoy. And Deirdre, thank you very much for the gift of your time, okay?
Thank you, Siamese.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Christine, folks, we're now talking to Christine Morale. And I'm going to play one of her songs so you get a feel of her and her music. And why don't we start off with Temporary High?
Oh, great.
Too many days these tears I cry. Too many days of asking why. I don't think it, I just Is this my temporary high?
That was Temporary High by Christine Morrell, who we're speaking to now. And this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. And as always, I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. So tell me a little bit about yourself, Christine. Where you're born and raised?
Oh, yes. Well, I was born in New Mexico, a little town called Hobbs. And I grew up in Roswell. About 40,000 people. Roswell is a city that's known for the infamous alien crash. That's kind of our only little claim to fame that we have there, but just a small community there in New Mexico. I lived there until I graduated high school. I live in Los Angeles now, where I perform four nights a week, and have just continued to always have a music career since then. So I started piano lessons when I was four, and continue to play and sing now in my adult years.
Well, you learned to play the piano at a very early age. Did your family feel that you had the talent, and did they encourage you to direct your life towards entertainment?
You know, all my family, they're all musicians, so they all play instruments, They all sing. So it was everybody plays something. So it was kind of just a natural, you know, progression that we all kind of get involved with some sort of instrument. So when I was four, they got me involved in piano lessons, and you know, the deal was my mom said, you have to take piano lessons for a year. After that year, you can quit. And I was convinced I was going to quit. You know, I was, you know, a young girl barely going into kindergarten, and piano lessons just sounded like work to me. And but once I started, I absolutely fell in love with it, and have been playing ever since.
Now, the song that I just played, Temporary High, that's the song you created, and you did this lyrics and melody?
Yes. That's a song that I wrote, and I produced it with a friend of mine. My friend John Major produced the song, and we created that together, and we're working on a project right now, actually. So we have that song, and we actually shot a music video to it that can be found online if people look up Temporary High, Christine Morrell, and we shot that here in L.A., and that was my first music video that I ever shot. We did that last year.
Well, you know, that's the wonderful thing about YouTube these days, that a lot of people get their information out on YouTube, where they don't have to beat down the musical company doors anymore, wouldn't you say? Yeah, I saw some of your stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's you're so easily accessible now. You know, they can find you so easily, listen to your music, watch your videos. And so that was exciting for me to shoot a music video, and my sound has evolved. I've recorded about five or six albums, and some of those can be found on iTunes. And it's interesting how much you evolve, you know, throughout. And we're all evolving constantly throughout what we do, but especially when you do anything creative, you're constantly shaping who you are and constantly changing.
Well, do you see your music as mostly pop or what?
Yeah, it falls under a pop soul category. So yeah, it has a little bit of soul. You know, I incorporate a lot of different stuff. You know, my background's classical piano and jazz, so I bring in a few little elements from just all the genres that I listen to, that I learned, that I played. So it kind of becomes this little mix of stuff.
So how did you meet Siamese? Because he's in Vegas and you're in L.A., so you just...
Yeah, I actually used to live in Vegas.
Oh, I see.
So I traveled quite a bit, so I lived in Vegas for about a year, and then I also was in and out of New York and Dallas and various places in New Mexico before I made it to LA. I've actually only been here just a couple years now. But I love it, although I do miss Vegas.
When you were in Vegas, were you, because I didn't get a chance to ask Siamese that, because I know he does, he works a lot in Vegas. Were you also on the stage? Did you play the Vegas stages, or what did you do in Vegas?
I was doing, I was working on an album, actually. So I was in and out of New York while I was there. So I wasn't really performing much. I did a few performances, but I was focusing more on writing. So I was kind of more of a hermit, I guess. And I was kind of just hidden away, going back and forth to New York, recording. And I actually recorded an album that's on iTunes. It's called When You're Gone. So, yeah, I worked on that for that whole year and just found inspiration through, you know, Vegas is such a magical place. It's not hard to find inspiration there.
Or anywhere, really, if it's inside you, correct?
I'm sorry? Say that again?
Or anywhere you go, if the music's inside you, you take it with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Vegas is just like this place of, like, where everyone goes, so, you know, they just go to great lengths to be entertaining, you know, lights, fire, you know, they're sexy, they're fun, they're just, you know, the most talented people are there. So it was a great time.
I know also that when I'm reading your bio, it said that you had performed on 6 continents. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, it's all been, you know, for various reasons, but it's all through music. Some of it has to do with touring, and, you know, some of it has to do with charity work. So the charity work that I did was in Thailand and Peru and South Africa. So I worked in just various places, everything from special education centers to low-income schools. And then I also did touring for different, like, corporate parties and, you know, visited everything from Australia, you know, to, you know, every continent, South America, Europe, and Africa. And so it's been, and that's the, you know, I love traveling. So to combine the two things, it's pretty amazing to see the world and also see it while you're doing what you love.
Now, when you travel to these places, how do they receive your music?
I'm sorry, I missed the last thing that you said.
When you travel to different continents, like you just mentioned, Australia, Africa, and so forth, Thailand,
yes.
How do they like your music? How do they accept your music?
Oh, they're so welcoming, you know, just, and it's always interesting because, you know, every place you go, they have their, like, you know, their style that they usually listen to, and sometimes I was always nervous about, you know, are they going to accept what I do? My sound is, you know, very unique, and it's not for everyone. So while I was out, I'm just so I was just always so humbled because everybody was always so welcoming and supportive, and really enjoyed, you know, having just people out there and performing and stuff and sharing music. So I think music's pretty universal. You know, everybody loves to sing and dance and stuff. So it was nice to see how people reacted around the world.
I agree with you there. So I understand also that you have an entrepreneurial spirit. So tell me about your business endeavors.
Yeah, I have a chip and salsa company called Little Christie's. It's in, right now it's in New Mexico mainly, and it's a Mexican food company, like Whole Foods and Sprout stores, and that's something I started about 4 years ago. It's tortilla chips and salsas, and it's kind of random. It's like a random business to be involved in, especially when I'm so involved in music. And food wasn't something that I really was familiar with or knew. But it's been really exciting and fun. And actually, some of the things we've done, I've kind of connected the two things. And I'll perform inside, like, Whole Foods stores and perform inside of these grocery stores and sing, like, really silly songs about, you know, chips and salsa and stuff. So I've been able to have a lot of fun promoting it. I go on a lot of different, like, cooking shows and different places like that. And I'll cook a Mexican dish, and then I'll perform. So it's been fun. Food and music, I think, are both very celebrated. So to be able to bring the two together, it's very easy.
Well, how do you take it from an idea to actually package it and get it out there? Was that a learning experience?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. I didn't know that business, you know, at all. I mean, I've worked in food as like a teenager, but I mean, that's completely different than, you know, managing or creating a company. So, I mean, it was just kind of a lot of trial and error because I didn't really have, you know, someone there like step by step, this is what you do. It was kind of more like, well, if I want to bring out a chip, you know, if I want to introduce a chip, I got to have a packaging for it. So I started doing research on how to get packaging and, you know, how to do everything. But for the most part, it's all been trial and error. I've made a ton of mistakes. But mainly just kind of going up to the grocery stores and saying, how do I get my products here? And, you know, over the last 4 years, I've just learned and just taken in a whole lot of knowledge and just, I think, made more mistakes than, you know, anything else. But, you know, you learn so much through those.
Exactly. Now, when you say, did you develop the chip itself? I mean, you created the chip itself or what?
Well, my family, they have my father has his own brand of Mexican food products as well. And he actually has a factory. And so I buy the products from not only him, but there's another factory as well that I purchased from. And they're recipes that have been in my family for a long time. So I've taken recipes that we love and have always celebrated and just packaged it as the Little Christie's brand. But they're made both in Roswell, which is my father's factory, and then also made in Santa Fe. They're in New Mexico in another factory, depending on the product.
Now, you mentioned Roswell. Do people often tease you about seeing Little Green Men?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I've had people say, you know, there's, you know, lots of fanatical stuff, and they're like, have you ever, you know, seen aliens? And I'm like, it's funny because they're actually really asking if I've seen aliens, or I have, like, children that are like, are there aliens walking around on the street? So it's cute. It's funny. It's like, at least we're known for something. I mean, it's a very small town, so there's not a lot going on there. But throughout my travels throughout the world, everybody knows it, which I was actually really surprised because I had no idea. But every time I mention Roswell, no matter where I am, doesn't matter which country or which continent, everybody knows Roswell. So it's pretty hilarious.
Right. I just saw something on YouTube with I'm trying to think of the governor's name. He's an ex-governor now that does that show, Conspiracies.
Uh-huh.
That he went out there to view Roswell. But you can't get that close to it, it seems. It's very well guarded.
Yeah, well, and then there's it actually happened like 40 miles out of the city. So it's not really in the city, and it's just kind of out in the country. I've actually never been to the crash site. So I've never visited it, but we have like tons of UFO museums and, you know, all the photographs of flying saucers and, you know, accounts of, you know, all the people that, you know, made reports whenever the alien crash happened. So there's all these newspaper articles. It's definitely interesting. It definitely gets your mind kind of racing.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. To your music. You say you're working on a CD. When can we expect that to be out?
I would imagine it'll be out by the beginning of summer. I have two singles right now. I have another one called Over and Over. It's also on iTunes, so people search Over and Over, Christine Morrell. It'll come up. So we've shot those. And we're almost finished with it. We're probably, we have about 8 to 10 songs that are already good to go on the album. And, you know, it kind of has this Euro sound. You know, it's very pop soul. People like Adele, people like Amy Winehouse, people like the Black Keys. It falls under that genre. I'm working on it with John Major, and well, I imagine probably by May. Should be done around May.
Well, now I was mentioning before to Samis about family and relationships, but you travel a lot, and you're always working. You say in either New York or L.A. or Las Vegas or out of the country. How do you maintain relationships? Is that rather difficult for you?
No, actually, not really. It was when I had when I was traveling more, you know, a few years ago, because I was traveling all over the place. I kind of didn't have as many, I would say, like close friends. I had a lot of acquaintances and stuff. But now I'm mostly situated in LA, and I perform at, you know, many of the same places many nights a week. So I have, you know, I make friends with usually other people in the business, you know, so you're if you're in the business of music, you make friends with other musicians that understand you and know that, you know, there's certain priorities that you have and know that you're traveling and know that they get it when, you know, you can't show up to the birthday party or whatever, there's like no hard feelings and stuff. So mainly all my friends and have been in the industry or are in a creative industry, especially being based in Hollywood. And then my family, they come out to see me. They come out here, or I fly down to New Mexico to see them. I'll actually be there this month to go see them. So it's just making, you know, different sacrifices and making sure to, you know, I know when it's been a couple months and I haven't seen my family, you know, I make sure to go down and see them or, you know, invite them up to come hang out with me here in L.A.
Well, what is your goal? Do you want to be a big star, or are you just happy to get your music out there?
It would be amazing to you know, really just be touring the world and really just be, you know, all over the map and hear my music on the radio. That's, of course, the ultimate goal. At the same time, I'm also really excited to even make music for a living. I think that that's an accomplishment itself. So, you know, I always want more. I'm also just very thankful for being able to do what I love for a living and not waking up and, you know, dreading having to go to work or dreading to have to do something that I really don't enjoy. So definitely that's the goal. But in the meantime, I'm really enjoying the ride.
Now, you talk about that, but you make your money by, what, performing in clubs or what?
Mostly performances. Yeah, and I do have my music on iTunes, and I've written songs for other people, and everything is, you know, music-related, but the majority of the way I make my living is performing. So I perform about 4 to 5 nights a week in L.A., and then I also, you know, still travel and perform around the country.
Well, where could people go to see you if they wanted to see you live?
Well, I have a website. If they go to ChristineMorrell.com, I keep it updated. I mostly perform everything from piano bars to casinos to clubs to just about, you know, hotels here. So it varies, but if they go to my website, my calendar's there. It shows you exactly where I'm performing. I usually play in the evenings, and yeah, I play about 4 nights a week. So if someone's in LA, they can most likely catch me performing around town.
Now, how do you get your jobs? Do you audition?
I don't really audition so much anymore. When I first started out, you know, it was mainly auditioning, but now mainly word of mouth. So, you know, I have been doing it for a long time now. So usually if someone's looking for, you know, a specific type of performer or whatever it be, some, you know, someone will have heard about me or they'll come see me and maybe they own a club and they're looking for, you know, entertainment. So they'll ask me to be a part of what they've got going on, but mainly word of mouth. So it's nice now that I've kind of been around, I don't have to audition so much, but if there was a really cool gig around that required an audition, I would totally do it. But it's been nice to not have to go through that process. And it's been nice that everyone's enjoyed me here in LA. I feel like they've really embraced me, and it hasn't been hard to constantly be working and performing and sharing my music.
What do you sing with a particular band? Do you have your own band, or usually when you go in, they have the band?
Yeah, it depends on the gig. So I play and, you know, sing. So sometimes I'm a solo act. Sometimes I have a full band. You know, sometimes I was playing over at Universal Studios for a while, and we had a full, there was probably about 6 or 7 of us that all played, you know, multiple instruments and sang together. And
So sometimes we have a full, you know, bass, guitar, drums, keyboard, saxophone, you know, all, you know, multiple instruments. And sometimes I play, you know, by myself, just me and the piano. So it just depends, you know, what, on where I'm performing and what kind of suits the place, you know.
Well, is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like to share with us?
Well, I mean, if anybody wants to stay in touch with me, I guess I can put my links out there. I have my Facebook, which if people just look up Christine Morrell Music, it's there. You know, ChristineMorrell.com is my website. That's where people can find absolutely everything on there. And Instagram is Christine Morrell. It's Christine with a K. Twitter is Christine Morrell. I'm the only Christine Morrell on the internet, so it's pretty easy to find me on any of the social networking sites.
Well, I'm glad that you came on and shared yourself with us and your music. In fact, I'm going to play.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now I'm going to play, since you did mention your song Over and Over. Now, you wrote Over and Over yourself, right? Was there a particular inspiration for that?
Over and Over is a song, and I feel like everybody identifies with it. It's just having one of those relationships that is really bad for you, but the highs are so high and the lows are so low. But when it's good, it's so good that when you look back at it and you're thinking, you know, as much as it was painful, there were so many high points that it's like you would do it over and over again to relive some of those amazing moments. So that was my inspiration.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for coming on the show. And it's been my pleasure talking with you. And again, everybody, you're most welcome. And anyone that wants to find out more can go on Christine's website. It's just www.christinemorrell.com. Christine?
Yes.
The website is just www.christinemorrell.com.
Yes, it's Christine Morrell, and it's Christine with a K.
Okay, and folks, you can also see her on Facebook and Twitter and all those other good places, Instagram and so forth. And this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I'm Deirdre Shuley, your host. And I want to thank my listeners for making my topic topically yours. And we're going to end the show with Christine Morrell singing Over and Over. Here we go.
One, two, three, four. Your love, your love is like butter. It's
And you've been listening to the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.